So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to Trending, and good news, it is Friday. That's great news, right? To be Friday, I don't know, maybe wherever you're at, whether you're on your way home, you're already home, going through some dinner. Tonight we had salmon, and I have this like love-hate relationship with fish. I really couldn't stand fish growing up, any fish, any seafood, and I started to like try to force myself to eat seafood during Lent as like a penance, and I grew to like really make tuna fish salad in a way that I enjoyed too much, so I had to give up on the tuna fish because I started to enjoy it. And then salmon's been the thing that I've been force feeding myself for a while. Well, I like salmon, but I don't like it in my hair. You know, I know that it's really good for your hair, but my baby was literally rubbing her fingers in my hair as I was trying to pick up food around her and pick her up. I'm like, no, this does not work here. Anyways, you're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. We're going to be talking about a lot of trending things today, from what's trending on Twitter with the sex lives of college girls, a new show on HBO. We'll also talk about how it's International Men's Day. Thank you, Twitter. I mean, we need an international something for everything, right? Okay, I think we do. So we'll talk just a little bit about that and some of the interesting comments I was seeing in the news feed. Also, Will Smith has been in the news this week. He's releasing his new book, Will, along with another film that recently came out that a lot of people are saying they liked. Now, Will Smith is commenting in giving interviews as his book comes out and his memoirs about his childhood trauma, and he's also been speaking about his marriage, his quote unconventional marriage, that is his open marriage. If you don't know what that is, that's a great thing if you don't know what an open marriage is. I was talking to someone and they had no idea what an open marriage was. I thought, you know what, this is so good. I'm really happy you don't know what an open marriage is. But we're going to talk a little bit about his open marriage and the fun stuff today. It's Advent in just a little over a week, and we're going to be talking about doing some of those practical things that you and I always wish we would do, or wish we had done, or that we started when Advent actually started inside our homes. Everything from the Advent candles, the Advent wreaths. We're going to talk about practical reminders to make these things happen. Maybe you've heard of a Jesse tree and you think, okay, well, what's that? It's not a Christmas tree, but it helps us in celebrating the Advent season going into Christmas. We're going to talk about preparing and penance and how to do those practical things in your home. Now you have a whole week to order. So let's do it. Join me. I want to do things in my home and start to get into the routine before the baby's a little older next year and she's more aware of some of the traditions that are going on. Right now, it's kind of setting up those routines that are so important. But first, yesterday trending on Twitter was hashtag the sex lives of college girls. I had no idea what this was until yesterday. It is the new HBO show. Now, I find it fascinating because this is airing within a couple weeks of the reboot of Sex and the City on HBO, the reboot called And Just Like That. Now, if you read the description from the website itself for this new show on HBO, which, by the way, not that you should, I do not recommend it. I watched the trailer, don't even recommend that. But here's a description: four college roommates as they arrive at New England's prestigious Essex College. A bundle of contradictions and hormones, these girls are equal parts lovable and infuriating as they live out their new free lives on campus. And I was pulling a little bit from the description for the original show, Sex and the City, that aired back in 1998. And it talked about how life in the big city was part of the story and complicated sex lives that they shared all about with one another. At the heart of both of these shows, because you're probably wondering, why are we talking about this on Catholic radio? It's another show, an absolute crap show that no one should be watching. Well, I thought it was fascinating because both of these shows really do promote, quote, freedom, what people believe freedom is. And I think that this shows that we need to have a grander conversation about freedom. how we respond to these ideas, how we can help people understand that this so-called freedom is actually a dictatorship of sex. It's a dictatorship so common to so many of the wicked regimes that even today people are living under, that you're not free. And what's being portrayed in these shows is absolutely not freedom. Yet what we're seeing in this new show on HBO, The Sex Lives of College Girls, which, by the way, when I saw this hashtag on social media, is that not an invitation for predators or what? I mean, seriously. And you go through the feed, which I don't recommend, and it's just nothing good. Now, the show itself is meant to be a joke. It's meant to be a comedy. If you watch the trailer and look at some of the tweets as it was trending yesterday, and of course, we have to remember, things trending on social media are manufactured trends usually. They're not just natural trends that are occurring because people are talking about these things, but they're things that are being promoted in combination with people chattering, and the next thing you know, it's put on a trend list and everyone's talking about it because it's trending and because Twitter, Facebook, or whatever is putting it in front of our faces. But the reality is people are talking about it. Now, as you look at this and you look at the trailer and you look at all of the comments and the tweets, people are talking about freedom, no rules. Everything is funny when it comes to sex, and it's all about a party life. And I do have to ask the question, is there any coincidence that this is coming out 2 weeks before the reboot of Sex and the City, now known as And Just Like That? Which I find fascinating because And Just Like That, you know, this reboot 20 years later, is focusing more so on the idea of the complexity of living a more serious, mature life and navigating friendships and relationships. I will not watch the show. I have seen little pieces of Sex and the City. I remember some of my cousins were obsessed with the show, and being over, you'd hear it on, and there was nothing ever appropriate that was ever really a part of those shows. But what's interesting to me about these two shows is that they supposedly promote a lifestyle that's fun, adventurous, and free. And all of those things are excellent things. We want to have fun in life. We should want to have adventures, no matter our age. And we should all pursue and defend freedom. These are very important things. So what this tells me is, as these two shows are trending and being promoted and will be something that people continue to watch, maybe we need to do a better job of communicating about these ideas of fun, adventure, and freedom within the context of marriage and relationships. And show that it's actually even better to have adventures, to have fun, and have freedom within the context of marriage rather than through one-night stands, the party lifestyle, never getting married, perpetual adolescence. Why is it better? Because there's commitment, lifelong commitment. There's fidelity. There are children, which are an absolute gift. We have to help reconvince and talk to people about that. In fact, Monday on our happy hour, coming up this Monday, you'll have to join me. Maybe you have thoughts on this before the show. You can share them with me. I'll put a post up on social media over the weekend for you to share your thoughts. And Lucas, maybe you can put a post on social media now. My question to you is, this is the topic. Are people who have kids happier? We're going to talk about that this coming Monday during our happy hour. I think it's important because this is a part of the whole idea of helping people to understand that sex inside marriage is better. It is free. It is venturous. It is fun. The whole life, not just the intimacy. And having responsibility as well is a fun and great part of marriage. And it's something that a lot of people are shirking with the current culture we live in of no commitment, moving in together, and so many things. That's why we have to reemphasize again, fun, adventure, and fun, and freedom, because that's what so many of these shows are about. But let's focus in on freedom a little bit. It's been a little bit of a theme this week. We talked about it earlier in the week in light of the whole Free Britney campaign and her coming out from underneath a 13-year-long conservatorship where she made practically no decisions about her life. And even video surveillance was overstepping into her bedroom. Freedom is what allows us to love. But you see, freedom is for the sake of loving, not doing anything. That is, not just doing whatever we want. Freedom allows us and orients us toward selflessly loving. That's when we're most free. It's actually a matter of discovering a disinterested type of love. I remember some years ago, a friend of mine, she's a psychotherapist. We were hiking and we were talking about some of the themes of her work, and she was telling me one of the most common things that she's trying to work through with so many of her clients, because she works with married couples, is this idea of disinterested love. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I've never heard it phrased like that. It was essentially said it's really the idea of sacrificial love, of loving the other for the sake of the other. But within the realm of therapy, she's Canadian, and she said, we talk about it as disinterested love. That is, that you're not doing things for and with other people for yourself. There's a disinterest for yourself, and there's a love and a sacrifice and a giving for the other person. Again, St. Thomas Aquinas, Aristotle, so many of the saints, St. John Paul II, talk about this, willing the good of the other for the sake of the other, seeing the other person not as a means to an end, but as an end in and of themselves. You see, this is a part of freedom, authentic, true love. This is where we find our true self. And this is when we are truest to other people in our lives. It kind of makes me think about the story when Jesus is talking to the Jews who were ones who were believing in him. And they're asking him all sorts of questions. In John chapter 8, verses 31 through 33, I'm actually going to read it because I want to just ponder this. This is where Jesus talks about, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. What does he say here? So Jesus then said to the Jews who had believed in him, if you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth and the truth will make you free. They answered him, we are descendants of Abraham and have never been in bondage to anyone. How is it that you say you will be made free? This is a fascinating couple of sentences here, and here's why. What the Jews just asked Jesus, Jesus is saying, if you follow my command, you will be free. The truth will set you free. But they're saying, we're sons of Abraham. You know, we're meant to be free. We are not in bondage. We are not slaves to anyone. Remember, the Jewish people had been under the slavery. They were slaves to the Egyptians for years. So they're saying, how is it that you're saying we will be made free by following your command? Well, isn't this what many of the people who love the show Sex and the City and create the show Sex and the City and this new show on HBO and Just Like That and the sex lives of college girls, isn't this what they're saying? They're saying that to have a religious moral ethic when it comes to intimacy and relationships and dating and marriage is a form of bondage. To be committed to one person and for life is a form of slavery and bondage. Well, this is what the Jews were saying in a certain respect to Christ as well. But he said, if you continue in his commandments, that is, if you continue in the way of God, if you, in other words, continue in the way of the blueprint that God created for you, that will make you free. Because God isn't just saying, hey, here's what I want you to do. God created you. He created you for a purpose. He had that purpose in mind. And he's saying, hey, here's the blueprint for your life. If you live this way, it will set you free. It'll make you happy. But then the Jews are saying, well, is fidelity to a way of life bondage? I think that this is the question that our culture is asking. And I actually think this is the issue in what so many people think, that fidelity, a faith, a practice, a way of living apart from my own ideology is bondage, is slavery. And so this is the challenge, that we have to help people understand authentic freedom, sacrificial love, and that this is what leads to authentic, true human flourishment. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. It's great to be with you wherever you may be listening, live or on the podcast. And remember, you can subscribe to the show at relevantradio.com/trending or wherever you love to listen to podcasts. I'd love to hear from you. Maybe there's a certain topic you'd like to hear discussed on the show. Let me know. I want to unpack the topic of Will Smith on childhood trauma. We're going to talk about that along with his open marriage. He's coming out sharing a lot in light of his recent movie release and his memoir titled Will that's coming out. We're also going to talk about practical things to do this Advent to prepare your home for the coming Advent season. Things that maybe perhaps you wish you'd done. Well, guess what? You have a week. We're going to talk about how to get ready. You're listening to Trending with Timri. We will be right back. We'll also talk about International Men's Day because, you know, Twitter tells us everything. It's trending on Twitter.
Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down, and I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air.
Okay, that's Will Smith. He's singing the opening song to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I cannot get sick of that song. I think that that is one of those songs that brings a lot of joy to many people. Who watched the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion earlier? Was it this year or last year? I think 2020 and 2021 kind of like fused together. I'm barely swallowing the fact that we are a month away from 2022 and also that my child is almost a year old. Last year has flown by. But let's talk about Will Smith for a second. He's on all sorts of publicity right now because of his new book and new film that have come out. And his memoir titled Will has had a number of interesting points that I'd like to dive into just a little bit today on the show. The big one that has stood out to me, Will ended up coming out talking about some childhood trauma that he experienced. He kind of came forward letting people know, you know, you kind of create this facade for him as an actor, not really wanting to share all of this. And in fact, he shared when he was writing the story, it was for the first time that he was confronting some of these issues. And in fact, he said he spent 2 weeks doing what he called a book tour, and that was calling all the people who were in his book and talking to them and reading to them the parts of the book that they were in and asking, like, hey, are you okay with this? And one of those conversations he had was with his mother. Now, he said up until that point, he and his mother had never discussed the trauma that they had gone through when he was a child. And he goes back to when he was a young child about how his father was abusive to his mother. And up until when she left the father, when Will was about 13, he had a tremendous amount of frustration with himself. From a young age, he actually refers back to the age of 9 and how he believed himself to be a coward from then all the way to today because he didn't defend his mom at the age of 9. He talked about how his father abused his mother. And I thought this was a very deep and profound, a lot of things to unpack here, that to this day, Will still sees himself, Will Smith, actor Will Smith, as a coward because he didn't do anything when he was 9 years old when his mother was being abused. Now, put into this the whole context of the abusive situation, but also put into this idea that look how deeply ingrained in the human person is this desire to protect, to care for others, especially for him as a man, as a little boy. He knew part of his responsibility was to protect and defend other people. And from a young age, from the age of 9 years old to today, he still views himself as a coward because he sees himself as having a level of responsibility for what happened to his mother. In fact, he even talks about how in his teens he contemplated suicide because of the fact that he blamed himself and he saw that responsibility on himself. And I'm not saying Will Smith was responsible. He was a 9-year-old child. No 9-year-old child should have ever had to go through that abuse or that experience or that exposure. And if you have gone through that, I'm so sorry that you experienced it. And I think it's so easy for people who have been through any sort of trauma or bad experience or abuse to blame themselves, as in some way to turn in on themselves and to think that they did something wrong. Now, this is something that I think is key in Will Smith's story that she's sharing about. And I think I'm grateful that he shared this part. You know, there aren't a lot of things that I really admire about Will Smith. But this is one thing, the fact that he's sharing this, I think is a reminder for anyone who's maybe been through various traumas in their life as to the importance and power of Jesus Christ's grace in our lives, his forgiveness, but also his healing in the face of any wounds we may have experienced. We should never just leave wounds unaddressed, suppressed, unattended to. And that's why I think Will's conversation will really resonate with a lot of people who still need that healing or who appreciate the fact that he's sharing his own story. And perhaps you've experienced various traumas or pain in your own life. I want to encourage you to check out a couple resources. CatholicTherapist.com is a way to find therapists in your area who are faithful to the magisterium, to what the church teaches on everything from psychology, various ideologies, theology, sexuality, you name it. Also, HolyFamilyCounseling.org is an online teletherapy resource if you can't or don't want to meet a therapist in person. So that was one of the parts of the Will Smith story that really stood out to me. And again, you're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. Thanks for joining us wherever you are. The other part that stood out to me about Will Smith's recent interviews, talking about his memoir, Will, that's coming out, is how he has an unconventional marriage with Jada, his wife of 24 years this year. Now, he did an open interview a couple months ago this fall, talking to Oprah a lot about his marriage. I don't know how people talk about these things like this. You know, it was fascinating to me. One of the interviews I was watching from this past week, he was talking about, he even laughed. He looked at the camera at one point. He said, "Kids, don't do this at home. I wouldn't recommend this." Why did he say that? Well, he said that because he and his wife, Jada, had for years there had been speculation that they had an open marriage, and they have ambiguously affirmed that they do indeed have an open marriage. They try to make it sound like they don't, but they do. And Will Smith's really kind of made this clear over the last couple of months. They have a, quote, unconditional marriage, as people say. And what that means is an open marriage is where you're okay with your spouse doing whatever they want, with whomever they want. Because, quote, you trust them. You want them to be happy. You want them to be free. Ding, ding, ding. Notice that theme of freedom coming up yet again? If you weren't with us at the beginning of the show, I really want to encourage you to download and listen to this episode via podcast, relevantradio.com/trending, or wherever you listen to podcasts, because it's really important that we understand that so many of the TV shows and the culture that we live in today has to do with the wrong view of freedom. So he ends up talking about how he's living in this open marriage. He says, quote, we have given each other, quote, trust and freedom. He talks about how his wife Jada grew up never believing in a traditional view of marriage, a, quote, conventional view of marriage. And so they're so-called unconventional view of marriage is very similar to what she saw in her own home, supposedly with her parents. Now, what's interesting is that in one of his interviews with Oprah, Will Smith, when talking about his unconventional marriage with a wife of 24 years, Jada, which, by the way, they lived a monogamous marriage for years before choosing to do otherwise. And some of his comments had to do with happiness. Actually, I think we'll get to those in just a second because I think they're important. But he said that, I don't suggest our road for anybody. I don't suggest this road for anybody. What he's saying here is kind of this you do you mentality. I don't suggest things one way or the other. But he also, in multiple of his comments, between his interview where he talked about, hey kids, don't do this at home, and then also his interview with Oprah where he said, and I don't suggest our road for anybody, you could see there's not necessarily this full desire for an open marriage, perhaps. And what's interesting is I've seen examples of this recently, especially in the celebrity world, where often in these situations that I'm thinking of, the wife is the one who's wanting more of an open and, quote, free relationship. The husband doesn't want it, but he goes with it because he wants to stay married. He wants his spouse, and he thinks that he's doing it out of an act of love. And if you read through a lot of Will Smith's comments, he really does believe that he is finding an authentic means of love by allowing this so-called freedom to have an open marriage and open extramarital relationships. Now, I also want to talk about some of the comments he made with regard to this idea of a fantasy happiness. He said he and his wife, Jada, he said, we realized that it was fantasy illusion that we could make each other happy. Will Smith said, we agreed that she had to make herself happy and I had to make myself happy. Then we were going to present ourselves back to the relationship already happy versus demanding that the other person fill our empty cup. Okay, close quote. There is so much to unpack here. Because he does have one very important point. But how he gets there and his conclusion, their conclusion, is wrong. You, if you're married or if you're in a dating relationship, you cannot make your spouse happy. You cannot make the person you're dating happy. You will never make that person happy. You are not responsible for their happiness. Remembering, happiness is an emotion that is fleeting. It comes and goes. Giddiness, happiness, sorrow. You are not responsible for keeping your spouse. And that's one of the reasons why I hate that phrase, happy wife, happy life. I think there's a lot to unpack as to why that's problematic. Some of the ideas are good, but some of it is also problematic. And I think that Will Smith is living that happy wife, happy life mentality. Okay, she grew up with parents who lived in unconventional marriage. She wants an unconventional marriage. If that's what I've got to do to keep her, so be it. That is kind of that happy wife, happy life mentality. In a probably one of its worst forms. Now, he's referring to traditional monogamous marriage as a fantasy to make other people happy. And he's sharing this great self-discovery that he and his wife Jada have had, that we can't make each other happy. We're going to allow ourselves to both do our own thing, have this open marriage, and then when I'm happy and when she's happy, we'll come back together when there's already happiness there. Versus demanding that other person to fill our empty cup. The point that is important here is that you can't fill anyone's empty cup. Your desire for a child if you're struggling with infertility, your desire for a spouse if you're desiring a spouse, your desire for your spouse to be perfect and to meet your needs and act how you want, your spouse, your friend, your child, no human person can fulfill that happiness, that desire for happiness. What you're searching for is God, that perfection that you're searching for is God. It's not just a fleeting emotion of happiness. It's a lasting and an abounding life of grace and joy. Our desire for others, our desire for certain things from our spouses or from our relationships, points to our need for another. But ultimately, it points to our need for God. We know that's that famous quote, paraphrasing St. Augustine, "Our souls are restless until they rest in thee, O Lord." St. Augustine is someone who knew this. He searched everywhere else. He searched in carnal relationships, and he finally understood, our souls are restless until they rest in you. That all of these other things and people and even in our spouses and our children that we're looking for to complete us, to make us feel happy, to be our soulmate, what you're really looking for is God. You will never make your spouse happy, and your spouse will never make you happy. And you are not responsible for that, and nor is your spouse. And I think that that's something very important that Will Smith gets, but he doesn't get because he thinks the solution is an open marriage. You do you. You have fun. You be free. You be adventurous. You do anything you want. So I think there's a lot to ponder. I pray for Will Smith. I pray for his marriage. I hope you will too, because he's been very open and candid by what they're doing. But he's also, in those little subtle remarks, such as in the middle of an interview, suddenly looking at the TV while being very ambiguous about his open marriage, literally says, "Don't do this at home, kids." Or to Oprah says, "And I don't suggest our road for anybody." Will Smith is showing that even in the face of their unconventional open marriage, he doesn't want it. He doesn't suggest it. And this is a reminder for us to rediscover and help other people in this culture rediscover what freedom is. It's a freedom to love, not to just do anything you want, whatever you want. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. I have some news for you. I don't know about you, but I am very, very excited for Christmas. I want to invite you to discover the beauty of Advent with Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, brought to you by the Merry Beggars at Relevant Radio. With 25 professional actors, it's the first of its kind, an audio Advent calendar. New episodes of A Christmas Carol will drop daily from December 1st all the way to the 25th. Experience a Christmas classic the way it was intended to be told by Charles Dickens himself in 1843. Join our favorite characters from Scrooge to Tiny Tim in this timeless tale. So gather around your radio or computer for a story the whole family can enjoy. Details about the Merry Beggars production for Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol at relevantradio.com or the Relevant Radio app. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Hi, I'm Timory. If you're just joining us, okay, International Men's Day, we're going to touch on this, but then really, it's my favorite liturgical season of the year, Advent. I'm going to talk about practical ways we can prepare our homes for Advent. You have time. It doesn't start till the 28th. And everything from preparing the Advent wreath, maybe you want to do the Jesse tree. Maybe you've wondered, what the heck is the Jesse tree? We'll talk about the importance of symbols in our Catholic faith, and especially during the season of Advent. But first, let's talk about Twitter. Thank you, Twitter, for telling me what's trending. You're probably creating these trends yourself, pushing them forward. Twitter created International Men's Day. Okay, so apparently there's a day for everything. Is there an International Dogs Day? I really don't want to be on Twitter that day. Okay, there is. Okay, I've made way too many dog comments this week. Here comes the hate mail. I get a lot of hate mail for my dog comments, just so you know. Okay, it's International Men's Day, and of course, what are people trying to make International Men's Day about? What do you think? Well, they're trying to make it about how trans men are men too. That is, women who dress up like men, that they're men too. Women who cut off body parts, go on testosterone, how they're men too. Okay, I don't want to get into all of that, but sure, that's a lot of what the whole conversation online is about. But one very, very important topic that's been coming up during International Men's Day on social media, from national organizations to individual men, is the problem of false accusations when it comes to sexual assault, sexual abuse. Yeah, it's been really interesting, but that's been one of the top things mentioned during International Men's Day, that there are a lot of men who have been criminalized for a false accusation. Now, if you are someone who's experienced abuse in your life, know that this conversation isn't meant in any way to diminish a victim or someone who's been abused, but to acknowledge the fact that there have been people, and maybe you've seen this in your own life, who have been falsely accused. And an accusation of sexual abuse can go a long ways in truly damaging someone's reputation. Unfortunately, it hasn't damaged some people's reputations. Unfortunately, has damaged some people's reputations who are innocent. One of the examples that I know we're all thinking about in the back of our heads is the Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh and the witch hunt that was taken out for him of false accusations made against him. We could even think of so many instances, maybe in our personal lives or in the public media, even inside and outside of the church. Things that should be punished that weren't, things that didn't happen that were punished. This whole area of abuse has become such a problem, but one of the things that came up in International Men's Day today on Twitter was the fact that this is one of those things that a lot of men walk around with a target on their backs for. And I know a lot of our priests have even said, like, I feel like I am one false accusation away from being totally betrayed by people. That is not trusted, not believed, losing my priesthood. What is at the heart of, I think, a lot of this issue is what's going on culturally surrounding sexuality. This problem that the ethic of sexuality today is a consent ethic culture. That everything is okay as long as you consent. But here's the problem. People are consenting, but up to a certain point. And then they consented, but then after the fact, they decide that they didn't like what they did or what occurred. And in some instances, women are frustrated. They're accusing men of, you went too far. I didn't consent to that. I consented to sex, but I didn't consent to X, Y, and Z. This is part of the problem as well of pornography. And pornography leading and turning things into what they're not supposed to be. Turning things violent and harmful. I don't want to get into the details, but we all know pornography has damaged the way people engage in intimacy. The expectation that boys are putting on teenage girls today to perform and show certain types of photos is a problem and result of pornography. But we are supposedly believe that it's all okay if it's consensual. But again, we're in a culture where people are consenting, but then they wish they didn't do things. And that's sometimes where an accusation comes from. Or there's also the instance where there is tremendous abuse occurring. But I want to touch this from the perspective of men today. Because it's International Men's Day, thank you Twitter, and this has been one of the predominant topics on the feed on Twitter. I think I have a challenge in terms of how we raise men today to try and help them to be bulletproof from potential false accusations in our culture. But I do want to share a little story because I did think it was fascinating because it surrounds this whole area of harassment and kind of from a guy's perspective that also wasn't the most appropriate situation. So for those who don't know, I am a certified Pilates trainer. I work with people with everything from herniated discs, spinal injuries, hip replacements, to also just teaching Pilates courses and helping people to work toward their health goals. Well, I remember some years ago, I had a client and he did a private session of Pilates every single day. And we had a great dynamic in terms of client and trainer. And I remember at one point, all of a sudden, he thought it was funny to start like throwing one of the exercise balls at my butt. And he kept doing it over and over again. And I'm like, that's not funny. And I tell him, like, not funny, not okay. You know, it was something simple, but it just wasn't appropriate. And so next thing you know, he decides, like, a couple days later, I remember I had told my husband, like, yeah, you know, I'm going to make sure this doesn't become a problem. It's the simplest thing and might be a joke, but it's not. And I wasn't offended. I wasn't upset. I just knew it was crossing a boundary that could become worse. And so sure enough, later that week, all of a sudden he decides to go for a hand and just smack me on the butt. And I'm like, whoa, okay, that's not okay. And he's like, what? And I said, that's harassment. And that's sexual harassment. And he, oh my gosh, it's like I lit a fuse right away. He goes, I don't know. And this was right after the whole Brett Kavanaugh thing. I don't know how women think that they can accuse men of things that are not sexual harassment. It was just a slap. And he's going on. I said, hold on a second. You and I both know that that wasn't appropriate. It crossed a boundary. It crossed a line. It's not okay. Not cool. Don't do it again. Don't throw balls at me either, okay? Like, I made it very clear. But he was kind of offended. But as we continued the conversation, the boundary was established. We did continue the conversation along these lines that things that some people think are funny and are okay that aren't okay lead people to make sexual harassment claims against them, that they consider it sexual abuse. But I think sometimes in this very small instance, it shows one example how things can be turned into something more than it is if we're not holding proper boundaries as women. And if we're not dialoguing with the men who we have relationships, dating relationships with, or intimate relationships with, or even just a colleague, and there's a situation that's not okay, and we need to put that boundary up right away. I think that's one end of the story. And again, these are talking about gentle cases, but I think cases where men are losing their reputations in smaller ways. But I also want to come to another perspective, and that is bringing up men today, being a man today, and being a man of good character. One of the things that stood out to me immensely about the witch hunt that went out for Brett Kavanaugh some years ago, and if you listened to Trending with Timmy a few years ago when that was happening, we talked a lot about it and how many men, as a result of the Brett Kavanaugh witch hunt and the false accusations made against him, many men said that they were afraid of having an accusation placed against themselves. And maybe you yourself have experienced this in having a false accusation or fear it. It really made me think about the importance of what we saw in Kavanaugh, that he was a man of good character. People didn't believe it who knew him. People who knew him from many years ago were willing to give him a character testimony, that it was so out of character. And Grant, there are a lot of people doing things out of character today in the 21st century. There are a lot of people, a lot of men who are nice guys but not good guys. But what I'm talking about is being a man of authentic character, having integrity, living a life of chastity, that is faithfulness to your vocation according to your state in life, someone who's truthful. These are characteristics, these are qualities that our men today should embody, so that in the event a false accusation ever comes against your son, against your spouse, against you as a man, there are people willing to testify for you as to your character. That people know that you're a person of great character, of good integrity, of chastity, of fidelity, of truthfulness. I think that these are things that we need to work on building up in our male culture, whether you're raising children or as a man yourself. That this is personified so that we don't see this trend that's been trending during International Men's Day, that so much of the conversation has turned to the fear of false accusations destroying men's lives. And again, I don't want anyone to be offended because I'm not talking about the real seriousness of ongoing sexual abuse and the harm and trauma and the damage that has done to people's lives. I wanted to talk about it from the men's perspective. I thought it was a really interesting conversation, and I thought that was a little bit to help the conversation. A book that came to mind as we were talking about this. Layla Miller wrote a book about raising chaste Catholic gentlemen. We'll include a link in the show notes today for the podcast, and we'll post that on social media as well. Raising chaste Catholic gentlemen, I think that's one way to help in the current culture we're living in, remembering to build up men of good character, of integrity, chastity, and truthfulness. I'll be back here on Trending with Tim Rain. We're going to talk about my favorite liturgical season coming up, starting November 28th, is Advent. And I want to talk about simple, practical ways that we can prepare for the Advent season. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, you need to help me with some research for Monday's happy hour. Here's the question, and I want to hear from you. Are people who have children happier? Are people who have children happier? That's the question. It's up on my Twitter and my Instagram, Facebook. You can go answer the question wherever you want. Follow me at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. There's always a bonus, cute baby photos as well. I need to post some new ones. It's kind of been a crazy month if you've followed along with anything that's happened over here. Anyways, so I want to talk about my favorite liturgical season. I've said this a million times, and that is Advent. And I want to talk about practical ways to prepare for Advent. If you haven't already caught it, we did a show on preparing for Advent, preparing, you know, books, understanding what the Advent season is. We'll continue to unpack this as the days go on. What are you doing for Advent? It's like a mini Lent, but it's different. It's a time of preparation and penance for the coming of Christ at Christmas, at his second coming, in the Eucharist. I explain all of that. But today I want to talk about the significance of symbols in our lives during the Advent season. We see this, we are rich in symbols when it comes to our Catholicism. Our icons, our saints, our stained glass windows. Even I think of the Sacred Heart that I recently received as a gift this year. A friend of mine got me a gift card for this Catholic company that sells little golden, like, Sacred Hearts. It looks like a piece of jewelry, but it's meant you can put it standing, like, on a desk as a decoration or setting somewhere. I thought at first, she's like, I think you'll really like the Sacred Heart, but I wanted you to be able to pick what you wanted. Well, it took me forever to decide, and at first, I'm like, I really don't like the Sacred Heart. It's kind of weird to have this, like, golden Sacred Heart in my home. And then months go by, and I go to finally use the gift card. I went, you know what? This is kind of cool. I'm going to buy it. And so I got this Sacred Heart, and it's sitting on my dining room, this pretty little area, and it has been so neat just for a moment to look at this symbol of the Sacred Heart of Jesus and all that it represents in the great mystery of Christ, and just place my hand on it for a second, taking a deep breath, closing my eyes, and pondering Christ. These little decorations in our homes, our crucifixes, our icons of Our Lady. I have this beautiful image of Our Lady that someone got me for my baby shower, of the Blessed Virgin Mary holding the child Jesus. It's kind of a unique photo of her. It's so beautiful, so lively, and I love it. And it's such a delight for me to ponder motherhood, for me to ponder Our Lady's motherhood and the joy of motherhood. So these icons are so significant in our lives. And this is part of what Advent is. Now, I find it fascinating that Christmas season, secular Christian alike, everyone's taking up symbols during the Christmas season. And the greatest symbol is light. Christ is the light of the world. This is why we light everything up during this Christmas time in the midst of the darkest part of the year. Now, we have so many symbols in the Christian tradition and so many things and traditions we can do during Advent, from the Advent wreath, the Jesse tree, Advent calendars, nativity scenes, and even just changing up the day-to-day decoration, even art in our home. But let's talk about some of these things, because I want you to be prepared this Advent to do those Catholic things in your home. From the Advent wreath and actually having enough candles to the Advent calendar. So we're talking about it now. Advent starts the 28th of November, that Sunday after Thanksgiving. So let's talk first about the Advent wreath. I really believe this is at the heart of Advent traditions because it's a reminder for us to come together for meals during Advent. And I spoke earlier, actually last week, about the importance of having meals together, not just as a family, but as a married couple. And I hope you'll listen to that segment. It was a great show. You can find that if you subscribe to the podcast. But the Advent wreath is a really neat opportunity to pray together. Now, you can print prayers ahead of time. Print them. Don't just read them from your phone. It's so much more helpful when you're around the dinner table not to take that phone out. Now, you can print the Advent prayers. There are lots of resources online. But, you know, you need to order your Advent wreath if you don't already have one. My favorite thing to do is I literally just ordered a ring on Amazon or wherever you like to. Whenever I mention a company, I always get like hit, like, how dare you shop here? Order it wherever you want to order things. Catholic Company is great as well. It's one of my favorite places to order things. And you can order your Advent candles. Know that if you're going to do this every single night or every single meal, you need a lot of Advent candles. All the purples, all the pinks, in order to have enough to burn throughout all of Advent. So you need your candles, you need your wreath. I just get a simple metal frame for the candles, and then I actually get a fresh green wreath to put in the center. And it dries up and it gets hard, but it smells really good for a while. It's fun. And you can get them pretty inexpensively. Now, why an Advent wreath? There are a lot of things behind it, but I want to share a few simple things before we get to the Jesse tree. The evergreen circle symbolizes eternal life. The green of the evergreen symbolizes hope. We have those purple candles for the sake of being able to be reminded of the penitential side of Advent, of the penance, the season of penance in our lives. Then we have the pink, the one pink candle during Advent that represents joy. In all of these Advent candles, you can go through the meditations, you can take these virtues on during the week and personify them. During the Advent season, I'll walk through each of these themes during Advent. But I highly recommend order what you need to do this Advent wreath. We'll talk more about it once Advent begins. Another tradition, another thing you can do to prepare your home is the Jesse tree. Now, I'm sure there are versions of this out there where you can purchase all the items, or you can create your own and make this part of your Christmas tree. Now, the Jesse tree, it's this idea that during Advent, we're going through salvation history, and we're using symbols in the ornaments that we put on the tree of the biblical story, following salvation history, following the lineage from Adam to Jesus. Perhaps a crown, and you talk to your kids about David and the crown that he wore, and that he was a king, and that another king would come after him, and Jesus Christ's crown of thorns. You could put a boat from Noah's Ark. You could put an apple for the story of Adam and Eve. There are all of these symbols that you can use in explaining and talking to your whole family about salvation history from Adam to Christ and the significance of Christ at Christmas. So that's one really neat thing. I still need to build up my ornament collection, and I'm trying to gear some of my ornaments in this direction for a teaching moment and opportunity. Now, the Advent calendar is another thing that a lot of people do. It's a preparation. There are things that I've seen some people do that I want to try and do this year, such as working on different corporal work of mercy each day, or spiritual work of mercy, or trying to pray for and practice some of the habits to work toward a certain type of virtue. Another thing that many people do is they put out their nativity scene, but without Jesus. Jesus is missing because Jesus is coming at Christmas. And for a moment, by seeing this nativity scene without Christ in it, we're reminded of what life would be like without Christ in our lives. Other symbols that we can fill our home and the day-to-day with are the icons we already have around our house. Maybe we have special Christmas ones, such as the Blessed Virgin Mary. Last Advent was such a special time for me because I was pregnant and we were awaiting our first baby. I'd always hoped to be pregnant during Advent. It was such a neat time, especially because she was born on the 20th, just a handful of days before Christmas. And so having those icons of Our Lady, pondering what it was like for her to have Christ in her, to literally be the dwelling place of Christ, to be a living, moving tabernacle for our Lord. Well, what's it like for us who receive him in Holy Communion? What is it like for us to anticipate his coming at the end times, at the end of our life, the celebration of Christmas when we receive him in the Eucharist? These are things we can ponder with Our Lady. Angels are a win when it comes to ornaments for the tree or various toppers for the tree or throughout the home during Advent. Angels are all over the Christmas story. And these angels are an impeccable reminder for us of how God intervened in time and history with Saint Joseph and the Blessed Virgin Mary, the choirs of angels singing at the birth of Christ. Angels help to usher in the coming of Jesus Christ at Christmas in the incarnation. And so angels are another great way to pray for their intercession as we enter into Christmas this Advent. Are people who have children happier? This is Timory from Trending with Timory. I want to hear from you during our weekly happy hour. Are people who have kids happier, yes or no? Also, we're going to unpack the four levels of happiness, getting away from a comparison culture, a self-interested culture that we live out ourselves, and going beyond that. So join me daily at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app for a little bit of happiness in your life.